Now we're holding on Tethzayin Omid Beis, about 15 lines from the bottom by the two dots. The Mishnah had said, Hakol Shechtin ul Olam Shechtin. The Mishnah had said, anybody can shecht and you can always shecht. So what does that mean, Hakol Shechtin? Now, earlier in the Perek, it discussed that not necessarily everybody can shecht. A cheresh shoit of a cotton can't unless somebody is watching them. We talked about whether a mummer, somebody who is deliberately violating certain averus, is allowed to shecht. We said that a goy can't shecht. So it can't mean Hakol Shechtin, as in any kind of person is able to shecht. And besides that, actually, the first Mishnah had already started, the first Mishnah of the Perek had started Hakol Shechtin, and the Gemara had gone into a long discussion of what exactly that means, so then there'd be no reason for our Mishnah to be repeating it. So what it means, Hakol Shechtin, means Hakol Bishchita, means all kinds of creatures that, all kinds of creatures that are in the category of shchita have to be shechted. So even birds. Now, when the Torah talks about shchita, it never actually says in so many words birds. We are going to learn in the next parak that there is an opinion that birds don't require shchita in a Torah, only midrabanan. However, we're saying that our Mishnah doesn't agree with that and says that birds are require shchita min haTorah. So that Hakol B'Shechta means Hakol B'Shechta V'Afilu Oish, means even birds, our Mishnah is saying, are required to have Shechta done. If you want to eat them, Min HaTorah, and again, not like the opinions, that it's not like the opinions that it's only the Dirabanan that we're going to learn in the next parak. When it says La'olam Shechtin, when it says you can always shecht, so what does that mean exactly, you can always, what does that mean that you can always shecht? Man Tana, which Tana would it be that says that it's necessary to say such a thing? In other words, that you should have to say that there are, that such a thing is mutter. In other words, Rashi explains, we already learned that in the first Mishnah, when we said Hakol Shechtin, so we said it can mean a kusi, it can mean a mummer, it can mean a person who's tamei, shechting cholin, etc. So what is our Mishnah adding by that? So Omer Rabba Rabbi Shmuel, he said, Rabba says this specifically according to Rabbi Shmuel. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, let's talk about the history of Shechita and the history of Jews being able to eat meat. Before Matan Torah, of course, they were allowed to eat almost anything except Avim and Achai, because then they had the rules of Bnei Noach. But now, after later on in the Masechta, we're going to have a Machlokas also whether they were allowed to eat Gidanosha at that point. We know that Gidanosha goes back to the story of Yaakov fighting with the Malach. Did it become also at that time, or did it become also only by Matan Torah? We're going to have a Machlokas about that later in the Masechta. But basically, they were allowed to eat anything. This is one of the famous reasons why we eat milchiks on Shavuos, because now that they have the dinim of Shechita and the Torah was given on Shabbos, they can't shecht and they can't cook on Shabbos, and therefore all they can have is milchik. In any case, so what about during the years in the desert? So the Tanya, we learn in Abaisa, the Pasuk says in Parashas Re'eh, Ki yarchiv Hashem alekechaz gvulcha, when Hashem expands your borders, kasher dibeloch, as he spoke to you, in other words, when you come into Eretz Yisrael and you conquer and settle Eretz Yisrael, v'amarta oichol basa v'goymer, and you're going to say, I want to eat meat, then the Torah tells you, go ahead and shecht and you can eat. Now that said, that's meaning, in other words, when they come into Eretz Yisrael, they're allowed to do that. What about in the desert? Rabbi Shmuel says what it means is like basar taiva. What it means is the Torah is coming to tell you that once they come into Eretz Yisrael, they're allowed to eat meat just because they have a taiva for it. Basar taiva is called that because the expression in the pasuk is kisa'ava nafshecha lechol basar. If your soul desires to eat meat. So when they're coming to Eretz Yisrael, then they're allowed to eat meat just because they have an appetite for it and not by bringing it as a korban. Because, says Rabbi Shmuel, Shabbat Chila, Nesel Lehem Besar Taiva, originally, when they were in the desert, after the Torah was given, they were not allowed to have Besar Taiva. If you wanted meat, you had to bring it as a shlomim. In fact, Rashi points out, you have the Psukim in Parshas Achrimos, we learned extensively at the end of Zvachim about the dinim of Shchutei Chutz, of shechting a korban outside the Azara, for which a person is Chayiv Karis. Rabbi Shmuel holds that in the desert, the only place they were ever allowed to shecht was in the Mishkan as a korban. If they shechted anywhere else in the Machna, they would be Chayiv Karis. So learns Rabbi Shmuel. So now the Torah is telling you, when you come into Eretz Yisrael, that won't apply anymore, because as the pasuk goes on to say, will be far away from you, and you won't necessarily be able to come there every time you want to eat a korban, every time you want to eat meat. So So now Rabbi Shmuel says, so is Rabbi Tfilin, Nesalam Besar Taiva. So originally they were also to eat meat just for Taiva. Now when they came into Eretz Yisrael, then now they're allowed to eat Besar Taiva, now they're allowed the Shecht without bringing it as a korban and eating. Now, of Achshav Golus, and now continues Rabbi Shmuel, now that the Jewish people are in Golus, he lived after the Churban, Yocho Yachzul the Isurin Harishin, you would think that now the original Isur comes back. Maybe the only maybe you can only shecht anywhere you want, only when there is a Beis HaMikdash. Maybe the Torah is implying that when there's no Beis HaMikdash, when you can't say, Ki Yarchav Hashem Alekechaz Gvulcha, Hashem has expanded your boundaries, because now you're living in Golus, maybe now it should be also to eat Besar Taiva. Therefore, that would be why Rabbah is explaining, following Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, that would be why our Mishnah has to stress again, that you can always shecht, meaning even the time of Golos, you're allowed to shecht and eat. Okay. Maskefla Rabbi Yosef, however Rabbi Yosef questioned that. Haila Olam Shechtin, then what's the expression, the wording in the Mishnah, Olam Shechtin, implies that you can always shecht. But in other words, if the Torah is not really telling us, if the Mishnah, rather, is not really telling us the halachas of Shechita, according to that way of explaining it, basically the Mishnah is coming to tell us, you should know that nowadays you're allowed to eat meat. So therefore, why is it only mentioning the shechtim? It should say, if the Mishnah is telling us that chiddush, it should be saying you can always shecht and you can eat. Because the point is not so much that would have thought you don't need shechita. The point is you would have thought that nowadays you can't eat meat. And therefore, the Mishnah should be mentioning the primary important thing that, yes, you can eat. And once you eat, then you understand that it requires shechita. So it should have said, la'olam shechtim va'ochlin. V'oid, and also, Meikra, my time, it's also, you have to ask, logically, why should it be also right away, to begin with? Why was it also in the first place in the Midbar? Mishum to have a Makari the Mishkan, because they were close to the Mishkan, and therefore, what are you doing, shechting a korban? What are you doing, shechting an animal in the Machna? All you have to do is walk a short distance to the Mishkan and shecht it over there. My time is through. So why later when they come into Eretz Yisrael, why does meat become why does it become mutter to shecht and eat meat is b'tavam rachki b'mishkan, because they're far away from the Mishkan. It's hard to go every time you want to eat meat. You'd have to schlep to Shiloh or Noiv or the various other places or eventually the Beis Mikdash. So then so logically therefore so Hashem allows it for Choshek and Ashtad Archik Lahu today. All the more so now when they're even further away.
But in the desert by the Mishkan, there were over 600,000 men between 20 and 50.
26, yeah, good. Mm-hmm.
That 20 and 60. Mm-hmm. That's quite a bit to be walking through all those camps just to get to where the Mishkan was being set up.
Well, people are going to the Mishkan all the time. When they had actual korbanos they were required to bring, they of course had to. But so what? It's not that far a distance. It's only the whole Machna was only 3 parasa by 3 parasa, which is something like 8 miles. So okay, it would be a bit of a walk, but fine. So you don't walk necessarily. You take you have somebody rent you as donkey or something, or you have a donkey of your own, whatever. But it's not that hard. It's not that hard as when you're living living in Eretz Yisrael, you might be hundreds of miles away from the Beis Mikdash. So then in that case, what's the logic to think that in the time of Golos we shouldn't be able to eat meat? Of course, we're even further away from the Beis Mikdash. And there is no Beis Mikdash even, but even fine, Tosfos discusses the point over here briefly about whether you should be allowed to bring korbanos in other places outside the Beis Mikdash, once the Beis Mikdash is destroyed. The halacha is you can't, but be that as it may, the point is that so there's no logical reason to think that you shouldn't be able to eat meat in the time of Golos, such that now the Torah, now the Mishnah should have to tell you, Akol Shoftin, to tell you otherwise. And then there's also the linguistic point that in that case the word v'oichlin should be in the Mishnah, because that's the primary point. So therefore, so Rabbi Yosef says that explanation doesn't work. Elo, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Akivahi. So rather, Rabbi Yosef says that rather you have to explain that our Mishnah follows the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, now the Pasuk says, Ki yuchak mimcha amlokim, when the place is far away from you, Asher yivcha Hashem alekecha, which Hashem is going to choose, losum shmosham, to place his name there, meaning the Mishkan and later on the Beis Mikdash, so then you're going to be far away. You may be living hundreds of miles away, v'zavachtim emkocho mitzoncha, then you can shecht from your cattle and your flocks. Now, what is that pasuk coming to tell you? Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, different than Rabbi Shmuel. Loi bar kosev ela lesa lahen besar mechira. The Torah is telling you now, if you want to eat meat, you have to shecht it. That means that now the Torah is telling you, you're not allowed to eat meat from an animal that was killed with mechira. Nechira basically means some kind of killing that is not a valid shechita. There's a few different explanations what exactly nechira is. Like further down on the Amud, Rashi explains nechira comes from nechirayim, which means the nostrils. So it means like you rip open the animal from the nostrils until the chest and kill it that way. There's a number of other explanations. Another number of other explanations. Rashi himself later on in the next parak gives a different explanation that nechira does mean cutting the simanim, cutting the windpipe and the esophagus, but not with a proper shechita. Basically, that is the meaning of nechira, is killing the animal not in a way that's not a valid shechita. What exactly the procedure is, it's called nechira, you have different possibilities. Be that as it may, Rabbi Akiva says, the pasuk is coming to tell you, once you come into Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to kill animals with nechira and eat them. Meaning, Rabbi Akiva says, "Shebetchila huta lehen b'sai nechira." Earlier, when they were in the Mishkan and when they were in the desert, they were allowed to kill animals with nechira, and they were allowed to eat the meat. So Rabbi Akiva does agree. By the way, Rabbi Akiva does agree that as far as shechting, that they would have to do it in the Mishkan. But he holds they didn't. It wasn't only you had to bring it to the Mishkan and bring it as a korban, as Rabbi Shmuel says. Rather, they had a different alternative in the Midbar. They could also instead do nechira and kill the animal that way and eat it. Once they came into Eretz Yisrael, Nesala and Besar Nechira. So now Nechira becomes Osir, and now if you want to eat meat, you have to shecht it. The Achshav Shegolu, so now then the Mishnah would be coming to tell us, continues Rabbi Yosef, now that we're back in Golos, Yoho Yachzula, Teira Nishin, maybe the original Heter comes back, maybe Nechira is allowed again. And that is why the Mishnah says you always have to shecht. So in other words, la'olam doesn't mean you always can shecht. Rabbi Yosef is teaching that it means you always have to shecht. There is no way to eat meat unless you're going to shecht it. So in other words, it comes out basically there's a sicha in Chelek Dalad. Rashi brings this on Chumash, but Rashi actually on Chumash only brings the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. That if they wanted to eat meat in the midbar, they had to bring it as a korban. It isn't really Rabbi Akiva's opinion at all. The halacha is actually the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Akiva and brings it in Hilchos Shechita. There's a sicha in Chelek Dalad where the Rebbe analyzes this whole point in some detail, what's the underlying machlokas between them. The Rebbe points out there's not really a great deal of difference between them. The difference between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva's opinions is not really that great. If you wanted to shecht, it had to be in the Mishkan. The only machlokas is, was there anything other than shechita that was mutter? According to Rabbi Akiva, yes, and according to Rabbi Shmuel, no. And then the Rebbe develops the idea over there. What's the deeper meaning of that? It comes out basically in the Midbar. They were on a higher level. They're beyond gashmius. They're eating mon and so forth. So really, when they're eating meat, they're going to be eating meat of kodesh. Now they come into Eretz Yisrael, they're starting the process of refining the world and then doing avodas habirurim, which we know that was a mistake of the meraglim, thinking that we don't want to do that. So now they're going to do that. So now therefore they're allowed b'sar taiva, which they weren't in the midbar. So the difference basically is, in other words, the Rebbe explains, so Rabbi Shmuel is going to say flat out, well, in the midbar, they're not allowed b'sar taiva at all. The only way is bring it as a korban. On the other hand, we do find that in the midbar also, they did sometimes eat other food as well. They didn't only eat mon. The Gemara brings that they also sometimes bought food from Goyish traders, Goyish caravans or whatever that passed through the desert, and they would buy food from them and eat it. So there was, to a certain extent, even then, that they were eating other food other than the mon. So now Rabbi Akiva in particular says then that what it is still normally in the midbar they're not eating meat other than as korbanos. As a one-off, if they're going to be doing, they can do nechira. The concept of shechita doesn't apply yet because it's such a rare thing, and generally the Torah doesn't make rules for rare situations, only for common ones. So in other words, he explains basically that this way they could accomplish a certain kind of birur with it, and they don't need shechita for that, but when they come into Eretz Yisrael, they can only be mevarer it only through shechting it. So the Gemara says, let's continue, let's analyze their machlokas on a nigla level. But my kumiflegi, what is the underlying machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva sava b'sar taiva le'itzer klal. Rabbi Akiva holds that they were never also in b'sar taiva. They're mutter always to eat b'sar taiva, meat that they're eating not just because of a taiva, and not because they're bringing it as a korban. So when the Torah says you can't shecht outside the Bismikdash, then that would mean, as far as korbanos, kodshim, you can't shecht outside outside the Mishkan. But when you want to eat meat, that would be allowed. And in that case, Rashi explains, so then what does the Pasuk mean when it says when you come into Eretz Yisrael, then if you want, you can eat meat. If a foreign to Rabbi Akiva, you could eat it even in the Midbar. Rashi explains, Rabbi Akiva would say what it means is later on in the Masechta, we're going to learn that the Torah is teaching you a proper way of acting. Don't eat meat elo l'te'ova. You know, when you have an appetite for it then, but don't otherwise, don't waste your money on meat all the time. So therefore, so according to Rabbi Akiva, it was never osur, and the Torah is telling you, as a practical matter, as a matter of derech eretz, this is the situation in which you should eat meat. Rabbi Shmuel, sova b'sar nechira le'ishteri klal, and Rabbi Shmuel holds that nechira was never mutter. There was never a time when after the Torah was given that nechira was mutter, and therefore, what is the Torah telling you when you come into Eretz Yisrael? Not that you have to shecht, because that was true even in the Midbar, but rather that you can shecht anywhere you want, and you don't have to, and you don't have to bring it to the Mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash. As far as then, what is the Torah telling you when it says that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you can shecht and you can eat? So it mentions, and actually explains, it can mean that it's referring to psulei hamukdashin, you have an animal that was supposed to be used for a korban, and now it became posel, and now you redeemed it, now you're allowed to shecht and eat it, but you're not allowed to work with it or shear it or whatever. It can mean that you're not allowed to shecht chulin ba'azara. So both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva will have what to learn from that pasuk, but the underlying question is whether the sar taiva was ever osir, according to Rabbi Akiva, never was, or whether Nechira was ever mutter, which according to Rabbi Shmuel, it was not. With Tosfos discusses, so in that case, does it really come out, does Machloikas, does it really come out that maybe Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva are just saying two overlapping things, and they're not really contradicting one another? And Tosfos says, the fact is, there is a certain contradiction in there. In fact, the Rambam actually paskins, when the Rambam brings this concept, he says, according to Rabbi Akiva, if they wanted to eat meat that was shechted out, that was killed outside the Azara, it had to be Nechira. They were not allowed to shecht it. Unlike Rashi, who seems to learn over here that according to Rabbi Akiva, they could shecht in the Midbar if they wanted. They just weren't required to. They could eat Nechira. It comes out from the Rambam that no, they wouldn't be allowed to. It would be also to shecht anywhere outside the Azara. If you wanted to do Nechira, fine, you could do that anywhere in the Machna. Okay, so Rabbi Shmuel said, B'sav Nechira, lo yishtu yiklal, Rabbi Shmuel holds that B'sav Nechira was never mutter. Okay, well, the Gemara says, B'shleim le Rabbi Shmuel, hainu duchtiv, b'shochat as manam bakar. Well, according to Rabbi Shmuel, now it's easy to understand why the Torah tells us when it starts talking about korbanos, why it says you should shecht the animal. Elo Rabbi Akiva, amai b'shochat. According to Rabbi Akiva, why does it say b'shochat? According to Rabbi Akiva, you're allowed in nechira, so why shouldn't it be allowed by korbanos as well? And the answer is exactly that. Kodshim shayini. You can answer that kodshim are different. Even Rabbi Akiva would agree that kodshim have special rules and you have to shecht them. But as far as other meat, the question is, do you have to shecht or maybe could you do nechira? Okay. B'shleim le Rabbi Shmuel, we can also ask, we can understand, according to Rabbi Shmuel, haynu d'chtiv, this is what it means when the pasuk says, so you have the point when the Jewish people are complaining, we want meat, and Hashem says, I'm going to send them slav, And so Moshe says, what do you mean? You're going to say you're going to give them slav. They're never going to be satisfied. And then he says, Hatsonu voku yishochet lahem. He says, could cattle and sheep be slaughtered for them? Umotza lahem. And it would be, Hatsonu voku yishochet lahem. Could cattle and sheep be shechted for them? So according to Rabbi Shmuel, in other words, the point is, all meat has to be eaten requires shechita. So therefore, so Moshe is saying, what's the point? You couldn't provide them enough meat. And actually, by the way, mentions on the Pasuk, as Machloikas, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon, what does Moshe mean by that? Is he actually denying that Hashem could give them enough meat? It almost sounds like Kfirah. And so first he brings from Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva, the same Rabbi Akiva as here, says that, yeah, it was actually, Moshe is, in a certain sense, almost denying that Hashem could do that, but he didn't get in trouble for it because it wasn't in front of the Jewish people, so it didn't cause a chilul Hashem. Whereas Rabbi Shimon learns differently. Rabbi Shimon says, of course, Moshe is not doubting that Hashem could do it. Moshe is saying, what's the point, basically? You're going to give them meat and then you're going to kill them. What's the good of that? Why should you want to do it that way? In any case, the point is, he's mentioning this point of a yishochet lahem, will it be shechted for them? Because the only way to eat meat in the desert, according to Rabbi Shmuel, is for it to be shechted. Elo Rabbi Akiva mai hatzonu voku yishochet lahem. According to Rabbi Akiva, why is Moshe mentioning shechita? Yinochel lahem mibarilei. You could just say, could cattle and sheep be killed for them? And the answer is fine. Nechira shalahem, zui shechitasan. Because we can answer, according to Rabbi Akiva, since at that point, Nechira is allowed, then if in effect that's the equivalent of Shchita. In other words, the Torah is using Shchita in the sense of the process that you need in order to be able to eat meat. In the desert, according to Rabbi Akiva, that was Nechira. So therefore, the Torah, he doesn't have to use the word Nechira, he doesn't have to use the word Yinocher, he can use Yishochet, but it means in this case, whatever method currently is considered the equivalent of a valid Shchita, which, according to Rabbi Akiva, would include Nechira. The Gemara says, "Bishleim Rabbi Shmuel." It's easy to understand the point of Rabbi Shmuel. Heinu d'tnan. Let's consider. We learn later in the perek. We're going to have a perek that deals with the details of the mitzvah of kisui adam. We know the Torah tells us when you shecht a wild animal, a wild kosher animal or a bird, then you have to cover the blood. The most common example that we come across it is every year when we do kaparas. So we're going to have a whole perek about it later. It was actually also in today's Shlosha Prakim of Rambam, one of the Prakim, dealt with all the details of that. Anyway, the Mishnah says, Hashofet v'nisnabla b'yodai, that if a person shechted, and the animal became nevela, he did a bad shechita, and he didn't shecht it properly. The knife had a nick in it, or there was shehio, there was drosso, any of the things that would pass for the shechita. V'han noicher, or if he's noicher, if he kills the animal by nechira, v'han ma'aker, or if he rips out the simonim and kills the animal that way. Potter melachasas. So the Mishnah says in all those cases, he's potter from kisui adam because kisui adam is required only when he killed the animal in a way that now it can be eaten. So Rashi points out, now we're going to have later on in the Masechta, when we talk about these dinim, we're going to have an opinion that says what happens if we shecht the animal? It turns out ditrefa, you can't eat it either. So then you could say at least the shchita was valid. But the pasuk says the shofach has domai that when he kills the animal and when he spills out the blood, if he sell the offer, then he should cover it with dirt. So you could say there at least it was a valid shchita. But here in the cases we're talking about, it wasn't even a valid shchita, and therefore the Mishnah says kisui adam is not required. So
if you shecht the animal on like a hard ground, then you can't cover the blood with dirt.
You have to have dirt underneath it and on top of it. We're going to learn that later in the Masechta. So the answer is you can't shecht it on a tiled floor or something. You have to shecht it on top of dirt or sawdust or something like that, where you'll have some below it and some above it, and that's how you makai in the mitzvah of kisui adam.
You know, a lot of just, like, bring in some dirt afterwards and cover it up.
Yeah, because it has to be underneath the blood. You can't, yeah. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, the details of those dinim are later in the Masechta. But anyway, the point is, for our purposes, what's important in the Mishnah is telling us that if he does Nechira, then he's potter from Kisui Adam. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, that's easy to understand, because there was never a time from when that mitzvah of Kisui Adam was given, there was never a time when Nechira was a valid method of killing an animal to eat. According to Rabbi Akiva, why should he be potter from covering it? After all, in the Midbar, they were perfectly allowed to do Nechira. In the Midbar is also where this mitzvah of Kisui Adam was given. So you should say, therefore, that at any time a person does Nechira, even nowadays, it should still require Kisui, because during those 40 years, if they did Nechira, they would be able to eat the meat, and we're talking about a wild animal over here, we're talking about a deer or a gazelle or what have you, and they'd have to do Kisui Adam. So why not? And the answer is, hoyove itzar, fine. But once it became osir, meaning, in other words, yeah, now, there was a time when it was mutter, and during that time, maybe you could argue that if a person did nechira, you should have to cover the blood. You'd have to do kisui adam. But nowadays, that it's osir, then that's not considered a valid shchita anymore, and therefore now, if a person does nechira, then he doesn't do kisui adam anymore. The Gemara continues, Bishleim Rav Akiva. We can understand now more easily according to, till now we had where we said we can understand this more easily according to Rabbi Shmuel, and we asked how would Rav Akiva understand a certain detail. Now let's turn that around. Bishleim Rav Akiva, it's good according to Rav Akiva, we can understand Da'oma Besar Taiva La'itzar Klal. He says they were never also to eat Besar Taiva, and he says in the Midbar they could do Nechira, and later on they have to do Shchita. Well then fine, Haidu Dechtiv, then we understand. After the Pasuk says that when you come into Eretz Yisrael, you can eat, you can shecht, and you can eat meat. The Torah continues, Ach kasha ya'ochal satzviv es ayo. However, the same way as you can eat a gazelle or a deer, kein techlanu, so you can eat it. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains, the Pasuk is telling you that kodshim, of course, you can't eat when you're tamei. But kodshim can't be, a deer or a gazelle can't be kodshim, at least they can't be kodshim izbeach, they can't be korbanos, because korbanos are only domestic animals. So therefore, by definition, anytime you're eating a deer or a gazelle, you can eat it when you're tamei. The same way, when you come into Eretz Yisrael and you shecht an animal and eat it for besar taiva, you don't have to be tahor for it. So even though you're requiring, so in other words, the flow of it would be as follows. flow of it would be as follows. Nowadays, in the Midbar, if you want to bring Kodshim, you have to shech them, as we established before. If you don't want to eat Kodshim, then you could do Nechira. When you come into Eretz Yisrael, the rule for your Chulin is going to be like the rule of Kodshim now, that you have to do Shechita. So you would think maybe the rule of Kodshim now, that you have to be Tahor, also applies. And therefore, the Torah is telling you, no, that doesn't apply. You can eat them like you would eat a deer or a gazelle now. So you could eat it when you're tummy. So according to Rabbi Akiva, we understand that's the flow of the psukim. It's explaining to you that even though you have a rule that now applies only to Kodshim, namely Shechita, which when you come into Eretz Yisrael is going to apply to all meat, however, the din of Tumah Vatara will not apply to it, and you can eat the meat when you're tummy. El Rabbi Shmuel, but according to Rabbi Shmuel, what's the point of the pasuk? Tzviva ayo gufei mehavi shari. Were you allowed to eat a tzvi or an ayo without shchita b'chlal in the desert? But pashtus, you wouldn't, because a tzvi or an ayo can't be brought as korbanos. And we're saying that you can't shecht any place outside the Mishkan. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, you weren't allowed to eat a tzvi or an ayo in the first place. So what is the Torah telling you? Like a tzvi or an ayo, then you can eat this, then you can eat meat. And the answer is no. Because to begin with, according to the Mishmal, we would say Hashem asked them to eat the Sar Taiva only of species that can be brought as korbanos. Wild animals that can never be brought as a korban in the first place. So those the Torah didn't ask her. In other words, so according to the Mishmal, the verdict would be, if you wanted to eat a deer in the Midbar, yes, you would shecht it. And you would shecht it outside the Azara, outside the Chotzer, the Mishkan, because anyway, you don't bring deer as a korban. But if you wanted to eat a cow or a sheep or a goat, then you would have to bring it to the Mishkan and shecht it as a shlamim. Meanwhile, so there now, the Torah is telling you, the same way as you can shecht and eat a deer or a gazelle now, anywhere in the Machna, exactly the same you can do when you come into Eretz Yisrael, with the addition that you can also do exactly the same thing with domestic animals, cows, sheep, or goats, and birds. According to Rabbi Akiva, the flow of the psukim would be that nowadays, you're allowed to kill a tzvi or an ayo with nechira and eat it. When you come into Eretz Yisrael, you won't. You're going to have to shecht them. However, even though shchita is now going to apply, which didn't apply in the Midbar, and nowadays in the Midbar, shchita applies only to korbanos, when you come into Eretz Yisrael, it will apply to all animals, chulin as well. However, the din of tumah v'tahara will not apply to them. So a point to both of them. In other words, the pasuk is telling us a chiddush that we wouldn't have otherwise known. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Boy Rabbi Yumiya. So now Rabbi Yumiya has a question in this connection. According to Rabbi Akiva, that they were allowed to do Nechira in the Midbar. So what happens if they had leftover meat? If they brought in limbs, pieces of meat from an animal that had been killed by Nechira, and they bring it with them into Eretz Yisrael, what would be the din? Are they still allowed to eat it? Or is it as soon as they come into Eretz Yisrael, then it becomes Aser? So in other words, the question is the Torah telling you once you come into Eretz Yisrael, you can't do Nechira anymore, but you already have meat from an earlier Nechira, then you're allowed to continue, or no? Now Rashi points out there's no practical halachic implication of this, because this is all something in past history. This is called Drosh V'Kabel Schar. This is called Hashem wants us to delve into the Torah and learn it and understand it and receive a schar from Hashem for doing it, even though there's no practical implication of it because it's something in the past. So that's the question. Would they be allowed to eat it as not? Actually, the Drosh points out there is an interesting practical implication of it. What if a person says, for example, what if a person makes a neder that says that I'm going to make such and such osur on myself from a certain time? But let's say, for example, it's Rosh Chodesh Sivan. So imagine a person says, beginning from Shavuos, I'm not going to eat such and such. I'm making a neder that's going to be off limits to me. Now, what if he has in his fridge some of that food from before Shavuos? Now comes Shavuos. He's not allowed to eat it. So now comes Shavuos. Is he maybe allowed to eat what he still has left over, or maybe not? So according to the Rosh, this kind of question actually has an interesting practical implication as far as the dinim of... As far as the dinim of nedarim. There are relevant things that the post can bring in this connection in connection with this of something whether a cheirim akohol or whenever whether it applies to things from beforehand. Anyway. So the Gemara asks, Amos, but when are we talking about? When is Rav Yirmiyah's question even applying? Elena b'sheva shekavshu, are you talking about his question is during the first 7 years after they came into Eretz Yisrael, when they're busy conquering Eretz Yisrael? Well, of course it would be Mutter. Hashta davar tomei ishtir lehu. We find that even actual tomei, even actual tray for food was allowed to them during those 7 years. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, Hashem tells the Jewish people, you're coming into Eretz Yisrael, uvotim meleim kol tuv, you're going to find over there houses that are full of all kinds of goodness. And the pasuk continues, v'achalta v'savoyta, you will eat and you will be satisfied. Now what's this kol tuv, all goodness? V'omrab yirmiyah omarab, baraba omarab, kosli dechaziri. It means, even you're going to find in there, you're going to find in there kosli of pigs. Rashi translates it with the word bacon. So you're going to find over there pieces of chazer meat in those houses, because of course the goyim weren't keeping kashrus. So you're going to find that in the houses, and you're going to be allowed to eat that. Now why should they be allowed to eat that? So Rashi doesn't explain. The Rambam brings that in general it's a halacha. When a Jewish army is going to war, if they can't find anything else to eat, then they're allowed to eat even treif for food, basically because it's a matter of pikuach nefesh. So according to the Rambam, it's not really a specific heter for those 7 years. It's just more generally a matter of pikuach nefesh anytime the army doesn't have what to eat. There's an interesting Maharal that talks about that. After all, one reason we're not allowed to eat non-kosher food is because it causes a bad midas in a person. So therefore, why should the Torah allow that? So basically he says that's not really the thing. It's not really so much because of the bad effect that it has on a person's character or whatever. It's really just because Hashem said so. So therefore, if Hashem says differently, then the din doesn't apply. Whatever the case, the point is, during those 7 years, they're allowed to eat even the outright today for food that they find in the goyim's houses and then in the Canaanim's houses. Psanachira miboya. Would you need to tell me that they're allowed to eat psanachira? Of course they're allowed to. That they had left over from the desert. So the question would be after that. During the Sheva Shechoku, during the 7 years that they're busy dividing Eretz Yisrael, at that point, the heter of Kodli Dechaziri goes away. So now the question is, what if they have leftover meat from the time in the Midbar that had been killed in the Chira? Let's say they made it into beef jerky or something. Another answer, you could say Rabbi Yirmiyah's question would really be even during the 7 years of the conquest. Because you could say, what is the Torah giving them a special heter for the spoils of the goyim? Because in the Pesukim over there, it mentions, you will be able to eat and enjoy the spoils of your enemies. So you could say, in other words, that there's a special heter for what they capture from their enemies, including me. But their own food, not necessarily would that heter apply to it. In other words, the Gemara in the Havam, and I had assumed, they were allowed to eat the treif of meat of the goyim, how much more so they were allowed to eat the sam nechira, but the answer is not necessarily. Maybe the heter indeed applies only specifically to what they took as spoils from the goyim. Tosfos teaches out the question a little more different. You're curious over here of what exactly the Gemara's original assumption was and what their final assumption is. In any case, the Gemara answer is teku. We don't have an answer. The question is left open. Again, according to Rashi, there's no real practical implication to it. According to the Rosh, there is. So the Gemara continues. Omer Rabba. So now Rabba says, Shonisa, or on the side it says it should be Rabba. Shonisa, you've learned in the Mishnah, or you've explained what the Mishnah says, Hakol Shechtin Ula Olam Shechtin. So fine, we explain. The Mishnah has three phrases in it. It says, Hakol Shechtin Ula Olam Shechtin or Hakol Shechtin. It says, anyone can Shecht. Which we said doesn't mean anyone, it means any creature that you want to eat that's subject to shita has to be shechted, namely animals and birds. And we said, la'olam shechtin means either according to Rabbi Shmuel or according to Rabbi Akiva, as we just discussed at great length, what it means in terms of shechting them. So now, Rava or Rabba is pointing out, shanisa akol shechtin, la'olam shechtin. Fine, you've explained very well what the words akol shechtin and what the words la'olam shechtin in the Mishnah mean. What about Bakol Shecht in my Mashanisle? What are you going to answer for the third phrase of the Mishnah, you can Shecht with anything? What is the Mishnah adding with that? You're going to say that it means, like we learned yesterday, that it means you can shecht with a sharpened rock or a piece of glass or a reed or a sharpened reed. You're going to tell us that you can use those. The question is, the problem is that the Mishnah is putting these three things together, implying that all of them are telling us a similar kind of thing. So, if the first two phrases are kol shechtin or olam shechtin are referring to who can shecht, then it means that also the bakol shechtin also has to refer to that the shechit can use any kind of sharp tool. And if the first two, the Akol Shechtin and La'olam Shechtin, are referring to when the things that are shechted, and you're saying it means any creature that is subject to shechita requires shechita, and in any time of history there was shechita, meaning in other words again, even when we're in Golos, then you would have to say that the part Bakol Shechtin would also be referring to the animals. So why all of a sudden? So what would it be? So it can't be referring then to the tools that you use for the shechita. So therefore, so that whole explanation of a kol shechtin, the olam shechtin, doesn't work once you consider the third phrase of the Mishnah. Ela amar Rava. So rather, Rava explains HaKol Shechtin is as follows. The word HaKol Shechtin is as follows. We had twice HaKol Shechtin. We had in the first Mishnah in at the beginning of the Masechta, and we also had an Arm Mishnah on Festival of Days. HaKol Shechtin, the fact that it says HaKol Shechtin twice, Chodol Asuye Kusi, one of them comes to include that a Kusi can shecht. As earlier in the Perek, the Gemara had gone into great detail about this whole matter of the Kusim. They were the colonists that Sancheiriv Melech Ashur brought to the land of the Aseret Hashem about them after he took them into Golos. They became quasi-Gerim. It was a whole question whether they're valid Gerim or not. Eventually, the Gemara mentions they found their worshipping of Adazara and declared them outright Goyim. But we're saying up to that point, then one Mishnah is telling you, one statement is telling you that a Kursi is able to Shecht. The Gemara had mentioned certain details. You may have to watch him to make sure he's doing a valid shchita. The Gemara had mentioned on Daf Gimel, because the Kursi doesn't care, he won't eat from a possible shchita himself. He knows that there's a mitzvah of shchita, but he doesn't care about lifnei iver, so he may give you to eat from the meat and not care if the shchita was possible on the animal is really nevela. So we talked about over there that you would have to watch him eat some of the meat so that you know it's kosher. Whatever, the point is that one HaKol Shechtin comes to tell you that a Kursi can shecht. B'chodel asu Yisrael Mumer, and the other one is telling you that Yisrael Mumer can shecht. A Yid who's habitually violating some particular Aveda is allowed to, or even the Gemara had discussed the possibility he can be a Mumer Eichel Nevelis Latei Ovra, and he can be a Mumer who eats today for food because he likes the taste of it or because it's more available or whatever. So then also he can shecht under certain circumstances that the Gemara had discussed over there. So the two HaKol Shechtins are coming to include that point. La'olam shechtin, when it says in our Mishnah that you can always shecht, and it also said previously that you can always shecht, that means bein b'yom, bein b'layla, means you can shecht by day or by night, as long as, now earlier the Gemara had explained, you can shecht by night only if you have a torch there. You can't shecht by night in the dark, because then you might do a posel of shechita, you might do shehiyah or drasa or what have you, and not realize because you can't see what you're doing. But if you have a torch, if you have a source of light there, then you can shecht even by night. So therefore, our Mishnah is stressing that point. Bein Berosh HaGag, also you can shecht on top of a roof, for example. We're not concerned that people are going to say, look, like that, he's shechting it in honor of the stars or something. He's shechting it as a korban for Avodah Zarah, to the moon or the stars or what have you. Bein Berosh HaSfina, or on top of a boat, which we're going to learn at the end of the next perek, you're not allowed to shecht into the water. You're not allowed to shecht to have the blood flow into the water, because that's going to look like you're bringing a korban to the malach of the sea or something. But you're allowed to shecht on top of the boat, because then obviously it's you're shechting because you need meat on the trip, and therefore that's not a problem. So our Mishnah, by saying la'olam shechtin, means all those details. And when it says bakol shechtin, when it says you can shecht with anything, that's like we said, it means bein mitzvah, bein mitzvochis, bein mitkrumis shokana, means that you can use a sharp rock or a piece of glass or a reed. The reed, actually, we learned yesterday, not all kinds of reeds, because some of them produce splinters, so we'd have to be talking about the type of reed. We said that a specific type of reed that doesn't produce splinters. Okay. So therefore, so that explains, the Rava says that the three phrases of our Mishnah are hinting to us and stressing to us those details which otherwise we might not have realized. Okay. Now, when we said in the Mishnah that you can shecht with anything, the Mishnah had said some exceptions. We said you cannot use a sickle that's used for the harvest, which Rashi explains. Rashi had explained that to Tzvavam and Beis that is all of the points, all of the serrations of it point in one direction. So in other words, if you run your fingernail along it in one direction, you'll feel it fairly smooth. But if you do it in the other direction, your fingernail will keep catching. So you can't use that because we said you might use it in the wrong direction. Vamagera, and a saw, where Rashi explains, a saw is actually that the indentations, the notches in it, are notched on both sides, so whichever direction you run your fingernail along it, it's going to keep on catching. So you can't shecht with those, because like I said, that doesn't do a proper shechita, that rips the simanim. Okay. So the Gemara tells Avur de Shmuel pogam b'shadar pogam b'shadar. So Avur de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, he's called that throughout Shas. His real name was Abba Ba Abba. There's a popular story of why he's always called in Shas Avur de Shmuel. But I mean the simple meaning, of course, because his son Shmuel was a lot more famous than he is. But in any case, he was a great Talmud Chacham in his own right. So he wanted to know. He wanted to learn from the Chacham. He himself lived in Babel, but he wanted to know from the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. What kind of pegima, what kind of notch in a knife will passel it? So pogam b'shadar, so he made a notch in a knife, and he sent that to Eretz Yisrael, to the Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. He made different notches, it actually explains, different notches in different places in the knife, and he wanted the Chachamim to then label for him, this one, the knife would be kosher if it has this kind of notch in it, and that kind would be possible. So he did this several times. Shodrulay, and they sent him back a message. You should know the way you should remember when it's possible or not. To Megera Shaninu, we said in the Mishnah that when it's notched like a saw. So in other words, again, when you if you're going to run your fingernail along it, your fingernail will keep on catching. As opposed to, in other words, they're telling him that when you have a notch which is feelable only in one direction, you have a notch that, for example, that if you do it in one direction, your fingernail won't catch on it. But if you do it in the other direction, it will. So then it won't, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, it won't necessarily be possible because conceivably you can shecht with the knife in the direction where there won't be a notch. So.
It's the same thing as a sickle.
You might by mistake, but nevertheless, if you did, then it'll still be kosher. It'll still be kosher b'diavad. Yeah, that's we learned yesterday. Actually, Rashi had mentioned a point that b'chlal, if you have a knife that has a notch in it, even though you have enough of a length of the knife that's smooth and you could conceivably shecht with that length, you shouldn't because you might come to shecht with the notched part. And as we learned yesterday, there are Rishonim who say, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that maybe what you could do is wrap that part in a cloth or a piece of tape or something and use the rest of the knife. Of course, if you can sharpen it, so much the better. Okay, so let's get into those dinim, into those details. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Sakin sheyesh b'pgimus harbe, if a knife has a lot of notches in it, a lot of nicks in it, nidun kemegera, then we have to consider it like a saw, and it's completely possible for shechita. So now, in other words, and the point is, in other words, so the difference is like this. When Avur de Shmuel was asking the Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, he was asking if there's one notch in it. That's only one directional. So then they're telling him that would be fine, because then the chance that you're going to shecht in the wrong direction is not so great, and therefore it's kosher. But now here we're talking about if you have many notches like that, so then tidin kemegera, then we consider it like a saw. So even though all of them point in one direction, and conceivably, like we were just saying, you could shecht in the right direction, nevertheless, it's still, we consider it like a saw, and it will be outright possible because there's a much greater chance that you're going to do it the wrong direction a little bit, and any one of those notches is going to catch on the simonim and rip them and prevent the shechita from being kosher. So the shein ve'ela pegima achas, if it only has one notch in it, a geres psula, then if it stops the fingernail, a geres literally means that it gathers in. So in other words, if it gathers in the fingernail, in other words, you're testing it with your fingernail, or as the Gemara is going to say later on, with the actual skin of your finger, and it catches in there, or geres, it catches psula, then it would be possible misuch seches. But if it's only like wiggly kosher kshera, then it would be kosher. So the Gemara says, "Heki damia egeres, heki damia misuch seches." So what does that definition mean? What's egeres versus what's misuch seches? Rabbi Lazar, it says on the side, says what it means is egeres mishtei ruchos. When it would be possible, when egeres means when the notch has two points, one on each side. So in other words, like you usually think of a notch. You have the straight edge of the knife, then you have like a V shape, and then you have the knife continues. So each side of the V has a sharp point over there. So when you're shechting with that knife in either direction, once that notch hits the simonim, it's going to rip them rather than cut them. Rashi points out that when we talk about the Mago Kotsu, we said in the Mishnah, and we said in our Mishnah that it is kosher, that we said in our Mishnah you shouldn't use it, but the implication was that it would be kosher b'dyeved, and we're going to have later on, actually, we're going to talk about that it may be kosher, according to the Hillel, at least, in the next Mishnah. We're going to learn about that. Rashi explains those notches are very, very bent over. So therefore, as long as you shecht carefully in the right direction, then those won't catch on anything at all. But here we're talking about when it has a notch, which is where you have a sharp point on either side, on both sides, then it's called a geras, and then it's outright possible, because no matter which direction you use it, it's gonna rip the simonim. Misuch seches, whereas when it says it's wiggly, means meruach achas, means only the sharp point is in one direction, but if you feel it from the other direction, then it's fine. Well, the Gemara asks, well, okay, but still, how does that work? Maishna mishtei ruchas, why is it that if the sharp points are on both sides, the problem is the mursha kama machlish. The problem is when you get to the first side of the notch, at that point it's not ripping yet, because now the notch is going inward. So what's going to happen? That first one, machlish, it's like it weakens, it starts cutting through the skin and the flesh of the animal, and it makes it ready for the continuation of the cutting. And then, Moshe Basra Baza, and then comes the second sharp side, and that rips it rather than cutting. So therefore, it's possible. The problem is, Meruach Achas Nami, even if it's a notch with a sharp point only on one side, aren't you going to have the same problem? Chorfer Desakina Machlish, the sharpness, the smooth edge of the knife, is going to start the process of cutting, the process of weakening, kind of, the skin and the flesh of the animal and preparing it for the continuation of the cutting. Rashi actually points out the word machlish doesn't really mean to weaken. It really means like it flattens out, like it gets it ready. It flattens out and gets it ready for the next stage. Well, the problem is also umursha basra baza. The problem is that then when you get to that other side of the notch, then it's going to rip it. And the answer is to koyim areisha de sakina. The answer is that there's only that we're talking about. When is it not a problem? When that one-sided notch is near the tip of the knife. So therefore, in other words, Rashi explains when you get to that part of the notch, you haven't cut anything yet. So there's nothing for that notch to rip. But here you have many pegimos. So you have one that's double-sided. Then you're going to have this problem that's going to start cutting through and that's going to rip. So that's the difference. Well, the Gemara asks, "Sofki ozal machlasha, ki osa baza." Still, how is it going to work? As you're doing, even if it's near the tip of the knife, you still have, as you're doing the knife from one end to the other, you're still machlasha. It's still flattening out and preparing the skin and the flesh for the next part of the cut. Ki osa, and then when you get to the sharp point, baza, to the notch, baza, then it's going to rip the simen. So after all, you do shchita with a back and forth motion. So what's the difference whether that notch is near the top of the is near the edge of the knife or not? Now, Rashi points out that, again, if there's a lot of notches, then it would be possible no matter what, even if they're misosachas, even if they're kind of wiggly, because then you're going to have each notch is already going to do its own thing, and you're going to end up having a rip over there. But here we're talking about, in other words, that where there's only one notch, then we're making that distinction. But why, after all, should there be that distinction? Shouldn't he say, even with one notch, you still have? The fact is, the sharpness of the knife begins the process, and then you get to that notch, and it causes a rip. So the answer is given shaholach v'lohevi. So the answer is, well, he didn't do a back and forth motion. He just did a motion in one direction. So he had an extra long knife where he doesn't need to do a back and forth. He's able to do the knife only in one direction. And able to do knife only in one direction and cut through the simonim without pressure, because pressure would make it possible as drasa. So therefore, so you're talking about he did it only in the one direction. And therefore, you don't have the tip of that notch is not going to the tip of that pgima is not going to cause any problems.
What if it's like on the tip, and like there's a few like one side notches, the knife isn't that big, but you just as they do it one way, then take it out and do it again.
So if you were to take it out over and over, I'm not sure about that. That's a very good question. I mean, that's still probably included in Hoylech Falehevi, because you're doing a motion only in one direction. It's not the right thing to do, of course, because you might forget and one time do it in the wrong direction, but maybe it would still be kosher in that case. It's a good point. I don't know. Okay. So the Gemara continues in this vein. Amar Rava, Shalosh Midas Pesachin, Gimel Midas Pesachin. There are three relevant types of knives, as we talk about as far as Shchita. If it's a geres, as we said, if the fingernail or the finger itself gets caught in the notch, lo yishchet, then you can't shecht with such a knife. And if he does, then the shchita is outright possible, because then, like we said, one side or the other, one of the sharp tips of the other or the other of the V is going to cause a ripping of the simanim. Next, continues Rava, Mesuch Seches, if the knife is wiggly, meaning, in other words, like we said, it has one notch in it, which is only one-sided, so only if you do it in one direction, then it'll catch on the notch, but if the other one not, Lo Yishchet Bala Hatchila, don't shech with such a knife Hatchila, because you might do it in the wrong direction, V'im Shachat Shechita Sekcheda, but if he does, and he's careful to do it in the right direction, then it'll be kosher. Again, he shouldn't do it, because he might mistakenly do it in the wrong way, but it would be kosher b'diavad as long as he did it the right way. Then you have a third kind of knife Rashi describes, that Rava describes, oyla v'yored v'sakin. Now, what happens if it goes up and down? Meaning, Rashi explains what happens is, let's say you had a notch, you had a notch in the knife. So what do? You want to make a smooth edge. So what you did is you sharpened it on a whetstone, but now you don't have a straight edge of the knife. Now the edge of the knife is like it goes inward, like it curves inward, or it curves in and out, let's say. So that's called olivyarded the sakin, and a knife shechet balatchila that you could shecht with it even lachtchila, because it doesn't have to have a straight edge, it just has to have a smooth edge. Okay. So now Rav Huna, the Breder of Nechemia, asked Rav Ashi, Amrit Lon Meshmeder Rava Mesuchseches Psula. Now you're telling us in the name of Rava, the second rule over here, that I'm a Mesuchseches, one that has a one-sided notch. You're telling me you told us that Rava said it's possible, V'Amar Rava Mesuchseches Kshera, but didn't Rava say, or on the side of it here, it brings a Girsa Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Shchitasek Kshera, that it would actually be kosher, where again the notch was only on the tip of the knife, and you were careful and did only the shchita in one direction. So why? What are you telling me? It's possible when we have a source that says that it's kosher. And the answer is like kasha kancha hulach behevi kancha hulach behevi. It depends whether he did back and forth or not. He did back and forth. It's going to be possible because of the one side of it. If he didn't do back and forth, then it will be. Then it will be kosher as long as he did it in the right direction. Again, he shouldn't do it lachila, because he might do it in the wrong direction, but b'diavad will be kosher. So now Rav Acha Breder of Ivi asks Rav Ashi, here's another question, another type of edge that the knife could have. Damiel Sasa Mai. What happens if the tip of the knife is rough? Damiel Sasa means that it resembles the top of a stalk of grain. Rashi explains, if you look at a stalk of grain, you have the stalk, then you have all the kernels of grain that grow near the top of it, and each one of them has a bristle on top of it. Those bristles, there's no actual notches in them unless you look at them under a microscope or something, but they're rough to the touch. So therefore, so here you have the same kind of thing. You have a knife that has a rough edge. There's no actual notch over there that your finger is going to get caught in, but that your fingernail is going to get caught in, but nevertheless, it's not smooth. It's not completely smooth. So would such a knife be kosher for shvita? Amalei, said Rashi, answers, sure, man yoiv lon mibisrei v'achlinan, if only someone would give us meat from such an animal and we would eat it. In other words, yes, it's absolutely kosher, and if I had an opportunity, if somebody would actually chef with such a knife, then I would eat from it, no problem, because it's perfectly fine, because again, it doesn't matter that it's rough, it just it can't have notches, but as long as it doesn't have any notches, then any grooves in it, then we're fine. An interesting historical thing that came out of this, the Mezitcha Magid came up with the Takana. I think it was the Mezitcha Magid first discussed it, but the Alter Rebbe is the one who popularized it, so it's considered one of the 10 Takanas of the Alter Rebbe, is to use what's called sakinim melutoshim, honed knives. Basically, as I understand it, before that time, shochtim used to use knives that were made out of a thick piece of metal that then was sharpened to a tip. And a lot of times, that was sharpened to make a sharp edge, and a lot of times that edge would be, like we're saying over here, misuch sechas, it would be kind of rough. But that's how it is, because of the thickness of the knife, there was no other real way to do it. The Mezitcha Magid, and more particularly the Alter Rebbe, came up with a concept called sakinim melutoshim, honed knives, which basically are made in a way where they can actually be sharpened to a sharp edge, which is going to be sharp and not rough at all, and actually sharp and perfectly smooth. For a while, it was very controversial, because Hasidus itself was very controversial originally. Many Misnagdim were against this whole idea. Eventually, though, it became more widely accepted. The Alter Rebbe himself wrote a tshuva to the leaders of the community of Vilna, which was in that time a community of mostly Misnagdim, and explained to them the basis and halacha for it, that the advantage is, even though we're saying in the Gemara over here that a sasa, damula sasa, is perfectly fine, nevertheless, the fact is there could be a notch there, and it's harder to tell, whereas with these sakin and melotoshim, you really have the best of both, sharp and perfectly smooth. And over time, it became generally accepted, and nowadays, I don't think there's anybody who shechts with non-melotoshim knives. The Gemara continues, Omer of Chista, minayin lebdika sakin min haTorah. How do we know min haTorah that you have to check the knife for shvita? Earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara had discussed that maybe you have to check it. You certainly have to check it before the shchita, of course, in case it has a notch in it. The Gemara had discussed earlier in the Perek, maybe you should check after the shchita as well. What happens if it got damaged during the shchita process itself? Then the animal might be nevela. But in any case, how do we know that you have to check that you have to check the knife and that this concept is min haTorah? So sometimes when we say min haTorah, we don't always mean Torah as in the five chumashim. Sometimes we mean the rest of Tanakh as well. And here the example that the pasuk we're going to bring is a pasuk from Sefer Shmuel. Shenem ushatem bozev va'achaltem. Shoal tells the people you should shecht with this and then you should eat. The context is the psukim are telling over there they fought a tremendous battle against the Plishtim. They beat them. They captured many cattle from them, and everybody had been fasting that day because Shoal ordered everybody to fast that day so they should have the schus of the fast should help them win the war. So now when they finally won the battle, everybody was very hungry and famished, and they grabbed the animals and started shechting wherever they wanted and were eating them. And then that's a problem. First of all, there was a problem of loiskoichu al adam because they were eating with the blood right in front of them. But one of the problems was also not necessarily are they checking their knives properly. So Shoal tells his men to go circulate around the people and announce to them everybody has to come here and shecht. He says, Shatem bozeh va'achaltem. So bozeh with this implies this kind of knife which I will check for you. So we see that you have to check the knives min haTorah. Couple of interesting things in that regard. First of all, it's brought in poskim, the minimum length of a shchita knife. In principle, we're going to learn later on that in principle, a shchita knife can be any length as long as it's long enough to be able to actually cut through the neck rather than piercing it. But nevertheless, the halacha is, and the minig of shochtim is, that the minimum length of the knife should be 14 etzbois. That we learn also from a hint from this pasuk, because the word bazeh, deis zayin hay, is gematria 14. In addition, there's an interesting thing that's brought in this regard. We know that everybody, many times you find a particular mitzvah that a certain person is mahadu in. Like he sort of adopted that mitzvah and makes it his own. In the case of Shoal, that was the mitzvah of shchita and the mitzvah of checking the knife. in the course of that, it's brought, Psukim say before that, that at that point, most of the Jews did not have metal weapons. Only Shaul and his son Yonasan had swords. How did they manage to get a sword? It was Bederach Nes, and it's brought in a medrash that that was in the schus of that Shaul was so extra careful with this mitzvah of shechting with a knife, which is similar to a sword. Therefore, Hashem made it possible, Bederach Nes, for him and Yonasan to have swords to be able to fight the Plishtim, whereas everybody else had to use whatever farm tools they had available. Okay. So the Gemara says, why do you need a pasuk for it? Pshita, of course you have to check a knife. Mikivin zikin nokav. The fact is, if the knife were to make a hole in the esophagus instead of cutting it, if it rips it, in other words, like we were saying all this time, as far as the notches, treifa, then the animal is going to be treifa. So boya bedika, of course, therefore you should have to check it. This that we're saying treifa, by the way, is an interesting point. We're going to learn, when we learn the third parak of our Masechta, we're going to learn all about the dinim of treifas, the dinim of what conditions make an animal treifa. One of them is that if the esophagus is punctured, even a tiny hole, then the animal is treifa. So here we're saying the problem with ripping the simanim is in particular that a notch in the knife may puncture the esophagus before you've completed the proper amount of cutting that has to be done for a shlita, and thereby the animal becomes treifa before you even finish the shlita. So of course you have to check the knife. What do you need a pasuk for it? The answer is bedika l'chach. So the answer is l'chach. What we mean is not just that you have to check the knife, that you have to show your knife to a chacham. You have to show your knife to the local rav or whatever for him to check the knife for you. You can't just rely on your own checking. So the question is that really you're telling me there's a pasuk that says that you have to do that? For Amr Rabbi Yochanan, like Amr Laharis Sakan L'Chacham Elam Mekvodish L'Chacham. The Gemara in Rabbi Yochanan says it was earlier in the Perek that the only reason the Chacham said you have to show your knife to the Chacham is only out of respect for the Chacham. In other words, in principle, yeah, Shulchan ought to be trusted that he sharpened the knife properly, the same way as you, in general, you can trust a Yid on matters of Kashrus, and in general, a Yid has a Cheskas Kashrus, and you can trust him that he knows what he's doing. But nevertheless. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan said nevertheless, you should throw the knife to the Chacham out of respect for him to show. In other words, you're not just relying on your own judgment. You're gonna defer to the Chacham. So what are you telling us? You have a pasuk for it. It comes out that it's only something d'rabbanan. And the answer is, you're right, midrabbanan. Akrav asmachta ba'almuhu. You're right, it's only midrabbanan. The pasuk is only an asmachta. You don't actually learn the din from the pasuk, but you have a hint in the pasuk to this concept that you should show it to the chacham, as Shaul is telling the people to show him their knives before they shecht. By the way, when you talk about something as an asmachta, it doesn't just mean, in other words, the Chacham randomly found a pasuk that hints at this idea. The Ritvah says an interesting idea in it. Whenever we have an asmachta, he says it means Hashem wants this to be this way, but Hashem, for whatever reason, didn't decide to put it as a mitzvah in the Torah. So Hashem put a pasuk in the Torah, leaving it up to the Chachamim. I expect you to delve into the pasukim and find this pasuk and realize that there's a hint in it to this takana that you should be making. So the same way over here, in other words, this idea, Hashem wants that a shochet should show his knife to a chacham, and therefore when Hashem gave nevuah to Shmuel, and he wrote Sefer Shmuel, then Hashem gave him nevuah to add this pasuk, telling us what Shaul did, so that we should be able to, so that later on, when the chacham make that takana, they should be able to look at that pasuk and realize this pasuk is implying that Hashem wants us to do that. Okay. So let's get into the practicalities, how exactly you check the sharpness of the knife to make sure that the edge is smooth. The Ma'arova Badkilo B'Shimsha. In the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, they would check it in the sun. So Rashi explains two things. First of all, they would hold it up against the sun and they'll look along the edge, and if there's any notches, then it'll be clearly visible. The other explanation Rashi says is that they would look at the shadow of it. If the knife has a notch in it, then you'll be able to see, but the shadow won't be perfectly smooth. So in Eretz Yisrael, they would check their knives that way. But in Nahavda, Batkula B'maya. In Nahavda, they would check their knives using water. Rashi describes what you do is as follows. You take the edge of the knife and run it along the surface of the water, just barely touching the water. If there's a notch in the knife, then the result is there's going to be a little wave in the water over there. So therefore, then you'll be easily able to tell whether the notch. Rashi says a second explanation is you turn it with the pointy side up, and you hold it on an angle and drip some water onto it. If there's any notch in it, then and the water will drip down over there instead of, in other words, like this. Rashi describes, you hold it at an angle with the tip of the knife pointing downward. If the edge is perfectly smooth, then the water droplet will run along the edge and then run along the edge of the knife, and eventually it'll fall off the tip. If there's a notch over there, then instead it'll fall down over there, and then you'll realize there's a notch. So now, they would check it that way. Rav Sheshes Bodek Labresh Lishnei. Rav Sheshes would check the knife with the tip of his tongue. Obviously, he had to be very careful about it to not cut his tongue, but the point is, he would run the edge of the knife very carefully along his tongue, and your tongue is one of the most sensitive organs in your body. So if there's any notch in it, then he would be able to feel it with his tongue. Rav Acha bar Yaakov bodek l'b'chut ha'sayra. Rav Acha bar Yaakov would check his knife for shchita using a hair. He would run a piece of hair along the edge. If there's a notch over there, then it would get caught in the notch. Bisura Amri, in Surah they took the view, Bisra Achla, after all, the knife, the shchita knife is going to be, so to speak, eating flesh. It's going to be consuming the flesh of the animal and causing and then killing the animal and doing shchita. Therefore, the appropriate thing, they figured, Bisra Livodka, we should have skin checking it. In other words, we could use the tip of the tongue, like Rav Sheshes did, or you could also use your fingers. So the other possibility is you run your finger along it and see whether your finger catches in it. The point is, in other words, Rashi says, you don't want to use something hard because something hard might easily pass over a small notch and not get caught. And on the other hand, if you use something too soft, then even if it's not a notch that's big enough to pass, or if it's like Daniel Asasa, like that rough edge we said before, then something soft would still get caught in it. So you want something average, and in Surah, they took the view that your finger or your tongue is good for that purpose. So the Gemara continues. The problem is a metal thing. Rashi is pointing out a metal thing is too hard. It might not get caught so easily in a small notch. So they might miss it. It might miss it, and that would be a problem. So the Gemara continues. Amar Papa, Tzricha Bedika, when you're checking the knife, you have to check it in a lot of ways. Abisra, you have to check it on the skin of your finger. Va'atufra, and on the fingernail. Va'atlosa ruchosa, and on the three sides. Meaning, in other words, not just the edge of the knife, but also you have to check the sides of the knife as it's going down from the back of the knife towards the edge. What happens if there's a notch over there? And again, it's going to catch on the simen. Tosfos points out that you have two things. You're shechting the windpipe and the esophagus. Now, the windpipe, as we're going to learn later on in the perek, has a hard part to it. You can feel it actually in your own neck. If you feel the front of your neck, you'll feel like a bunch of rings, one on top of the other. Those are part of your windpipe. We'll learn about that later on Rav Chof. We'll talk about it in more detail. So corresponding to that, you should be checking the knife using your fingernail. And then you have the esophagus, the food pipe, is soft. So therefore, corresponding to that, you should be checking it with the soft skin of the finger. Vatlosa ruchos, then you should be checking it on all three sides. Different gears there. It says on the side of here, vatre gisoni, and on the two sides. Meaning either way, it means, in other words, not just on the edge, but also along the sides of it as well, because otherwise there might be a notch in there, and then that'll catch on the simanim. So the Gemara says, Omale Ravina Rav Ashi. So Ravina points out to Rav Ashi, Omalan Rav Sama, Breda Misharshia Mishmach. You should know that Rav Sama, the son of Rav Misharshia, is telling us in your name, Da Amrit Le Mishmei De Rava. He's saying that you told him in the name of Rava that the actual detail is, Tzricha Bedika Abisra Vatrofer Vatlosa Ruchasa, that you have to check it on the flesh of your finger and on the fingernail and on all three sides. Omale, so Rav Ashi says, what Rav Sama told you is not exactly accurate. I did say you have to check it on the skin and on the fingernail, but I didn't mention the point about the three sides. I would hold that it's enough to just do the edge. Or maybe I hold that, but Robert didn't say that. Ikadami, another version, is he tells him, Amri, I did say it has to be on the skin and on the fingernail and on three sides, Mishmei de Rava loy Amri, but Rav Sama had said that I told it to you in the name of Rava. According to the second version, he tells him you should know I didn't, Mishmei de Rava loy Amri, I didn't say it in the name of Rava, it was my own chidush, or I said it in the name of somebody else, or whatever. It's very important when the Chachamim are transmitting Torah Shabbat Peh to us, they want to get it as accurate as possible, so therefore Rav Ashi is going to point out to Ravina, we need to make sure every detail of what you're telling me, Rav Sama said, which is eventually going to be recorded in the Gemara, we need to make sure every detail of it is accurate. So the Gemara says, an actual example, Ravina and Rav Acha Brei de Rava, Habu Yasu Tamei de Rav Ashi, Ravina and Rav Acha Brei de Rava were sitting as Tamidim in front of Rav Ashi, Aisu Sakin La Kamei de Rav Ashi Labodka, a Shoichet brought a knife to Rav Ashi to check it, as we said, you're supposed to show it to the Chacham, Omalei Rav Acha Brei de Rava, so he tells Rav Acha Brei de Rava is Talmud, Bidka Bodka Atufu Vabisar Vatlosa Ruchasa, you should be checking it. You should be checking it on your skin and on your fingernail and on do that test on all three sides. He tells him check it. Sort of Acha on his own, Bodka, he checked it accordingly. So he on his own initiative did it in that way, checking in each of those three surfaces using his fingernail and using his finger. Amalei Yishar, so Rav Ashi tells him Yishar, like Yafa Sister, Ashi says, you did correctly. V'chein Omer Rav Kahana, you should know, Rav Kahana said the same thing, this is how you have to do it. Rav Yema Omer, on the other hand, Rav Yema says, Atufer v'abisra tzricha, you need to do it on the fingernail, you need to do it on the skin, atlosa ruchosa lo tzricha, but you don't need to do it on the three sides. It's not so important, says Rav Yema, if you check the sides. After all, he points out, I have a proof for that. Mi lo omer Rav Zera omer Shmuel, didn't Rav Zera say in the name of Shmuel earlier in the Perek, libin sakin v'shochat va, if a person were to heat up a knife, red hot or white hot, the shochat ba, and then he shechted in it, now when he shechts with it, now the question is that going to cut the simonim, or is it going to burn them? If it burns them, obviously it's not going to be a kosher shchita. He says, not a problem, kshera, he says in the name of, Rav Zera says in the name of Shmuel, it'll be kosher, shechiduda koidim lalibuna, because the sharpness of it will have the effect before the heat of it. In other words, before the hot part of the knife touches the simonim, already the point of the knife, already the blade of the knife will have cut it. The edge of the blade will have cut it. The kashalona ikatzadin, and so we ask, what good is that? Fine, the tip of the knife will cut before it burns, but don't you have the sides of it that are going to burn the simonim, and then it's going to be a posel shchita? And then we said, beis shchita mirbach robach. The answer is, when you shecht it, then the area of the shchita widens, because what you have is both the windpipe and the esophagus, there's muscle tension in them. So when you cut them, then the muscles relax, and then the cut opens wider. So in other words, you don't just have a narrow cut where now the sides of the knife, the flat sides of the knife are going to burn the simonim. As you cut, the simonim open wider and wider, and therefore you never have those sides touch the simonim at all. Well then, sort of Yema says by the same logic, why should you need to check them for notches? So he says, by the same token over here, the base of shchita becomes wider, and therefore the sides of the knife, the flat sides of it are never going to touch the simonim in the first place, and therefore you shouldn't need to check them. Nevertheless, though, the halacha is not like Rav Yemar. The halacha is in fact like all the other amuroim, who said that you do in fact have to check it on all three sides. And actually the Rosh points out that you actually have to do each one in both directions, because again, like we said before, you're going to be shechting with the knife back and forth. So what you really do is you have to do on each of the three surfaces, you have to do your finger back and your finger forth, your nail back and your nail forth, and do that on each of the surfaces. This is also shchatam bazeh v'achaltem. We said before, the word bazeh, here ignore the bays because it's just a prefix, the word zeh is 12, hinting that you have to do 12 checks of the knife. There are actually nowadays they generally don't check with the finger, they generally just check with the fingernail. Now, the Rebbe discusses it in his Shulchan Aruch, why that should be. Why is it good enough to do with the fingernail? Why is it not? Why do you not have to also do it with the, even though the Gemara is saying over here, you have to do it with the finger, why in practice? They don't do it. And he brings from earlier post-game that because you will feel if there's any pagima, even with just the fingernail, you don't really need the finger for that. But then he goes on and discusses exactly what kinds of notches are going to pass the one anyway. And then he has a long discussion in Kuntres Acharon of why it should be fine that way. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll continue talking about these dinim of pegimos, of notches and nicks in the knife that would passel it versus that would keep it kosher, and we'll continue discussing that point and continue discussing other dinim of shechita.
Yeah. Do you,